Okay. So you want to open it, or do you want me to? I can always cut all this out. Yeah. All right. So yeah, welcome to the Memory Core, Episode 5, the special quarantine edition, because Amaris is a jerk and decided to attempt to kill all of us.
You know, it's one of those things like, oh, shoot. Dan, am I still there?
Yeah, you're still here.
Oh, okay. I thought I closed out the window. So obviously we're doing this something different. You know, we're doing this over Skype from our respective houses, even though we only live like 3 blocks away from each other.
Good social distancing, so, boys.
Yeah, we're doing our best. In the interim, I think both Dan and I have been working. And, you know, with the clinic, the veterinary clinic, we've been doing everything by curbside. There's a lot of time spent on the phone, and it's very frustrating because it seems that clients come in waves. And so we have 3 lines at the clinic, 3 phone lines, and it's like they're either always taken up or they're just dead and they're not ringing. And it's very frustrating. And I am strongly beginning to understand and empathize with the idea in BattleTech that when you have an outbreak, you just go for a complete orbital bombardment and sterilization of the planet's surface. Because I'm like, yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
That's the smoke jaguar method.
Yeah. Or the snow raven or the Draconis combine. We are joking right now, but I think, you know, Dan and I are very much in the same boat.
We're essentials.
Yeah, and even if the coronavirus is, and granted this will probably terribly date this episode of the podcast, but, you know, even if the coronavirus is not nearly as lethal as some of the mortality rates may suggest, you know, maybe it's quite a bit less, it's still an awful lot of people dying. It's still an awful lot of people that are out of work. You'll be running into this weird catch-22 where we can withhold mortgage payments, we can withhold rent, but what about landlords? And yeah, there are some pretty awful landlords out there, but they still have to pay their taxes. And if they don't pay their taxes, then what does that mean for municipalities? And if municipalities don't have their money, what does that mean for their budgets? And so, you know, for us living in Joliet, Illinois, if there is not an increase in income, Joliet, Illinois is slated to run out of money sometime in the fall.
They're having troubles too. I remember seeing a news article about the city of Joliet is worried about being in debt now.
Yeah. And so you factor in all these anxieties and worries, and we don't want to spend too much time on it. And we want to avoid politics to a certain extent because it's a lot of baggage we don't want to deal with. But, you know, it's one of those things like there's a sort of grief that hovers over us because there are a lot of people that are going to die, and people that we know. You know, I've had clients that have been diagnosed positive with coronavirus. One of them was in the ICU, and he's been in the hospital for 3 weeks, and he looks like he's going to make it. But for a long time there, it was really iffy, and I think he's lost about 40 pounds body weight. And it's scary. And along with that grief comes, anger that this wasn't handled better. And I think I'm going to leave that intentionally vague, just, you know, because of the politics issue. But that's kind of how we're feeling, and it's exhausting.
It really is close to home, man. I mean, I was potentially exposed to it, and there's a number of technicians that work with me that actually have to work in the hospitals. So they're seeing it firsthand. You know, if anyone's lying on YouTube saying, or in those stupid videos saying that they're not crowded, you know, like they're hanging out in the parking lot saying, oh, look, there's no cars here, or any BS like that, it's not true at all.
There's a lot
going on.
And we live very close to the Statesville prison in Illinois. And I believe, is Statesville, is that a federal prison or just a state prison?
I believe it's federal, if I had to guess.
It's pretty big. It's pretty big. And they got hit with it. And so you're looking at prisoners, you're looking at guards, you're looking at other personnel that work at the prison. And a very quick order, they ended up flooding the local hospitals. And
I mean, they have to, because otherwise it's just going to be a big petri dish.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of things to be said about it, but even if they're prisoners, they're still people. I don't want to just see, people just, die and let it spread. And, the same thing with like the Navy ship, that's a whole issue. So, I think it's hit us in a way that is kind of hard to comprehend. And in so many ways, life just kind of continues on as normal. Despite it all, it's not like The Walking Dead or, insert your shitty Zack Snyder movie. it's like, there's still plenty of food out there. There's still plenty of toilet paper. You can get it. It was hard there for a while, but you can get it. When are people going to run out of money? What happens when the credit card bills are due? What happens when other stuff comes up?
Yeah, I mean, my job has been talking. They're not talking about layoffs right now, but it's, our work dropped substantially. I mean, I do the physical security side of my work, and I do work inside of banks. They're open, but you can really only either use the drive-through or you have to set up an appointment ahead of time in the lobby. And that severely cut down my work because of that.
Yeah. And we've been at the clinic. We've still been busy. There have been actually an awful lot of sick dogs and cats. We have slowed down and I've cut my pay in half to just kind of keep ahead of things, because the payroll protection program that Congress passed looks as though it's pretty much already out of money. They'll have to do another bill. And in fact, my bank, I think I got an email this week saying they were still setting up the digital application form. And so I didn't even get a chance to apply for it. And it seems like a lot of them are already out of money. And there are concerns that, a 1% interest, and then before that it was supposed to be a 0.5% of interest on these things. Mm-hmm. But it's still with a chance of forgiveness. But 1% interest rate, is that even worth the bank's time and effort in terms of human resources and payroll to process these things?
You're still dealing with banks.
it's one of those things like, okay, yeah. I don't think there's anyone out there that's like, yeah, Wells Fargo's my hero. I'm pretty sure 90% of us who have had to do anything will say, yeah, fuck Wells Fargo. And, and I say that, I've used them as for leases on equipment that I've had to get and had to finance. And if you have to correct something, it's really tough. And I got it figured out. But, they don't exactly have a sterling record here. But, there's still people still need to get paid. And I think that's a fine needle to thread.
I mean, it's slow for me now, but I can guarantee you when everything opens back up, oh my gosh, I'm going to be so busy. If anyone doesn't...
Everyone's going to forget their lockboxes.
Yeah, I mean, if I haven't said it on a previous episode, if you haven't listened to like the little one-off I did to become more comfortable with this, I'm basically a glorified bank robber. I'm a safecracker.
It's good for the role-playing stuff.
Yeah. Not as exciting as the movies, unfortunately.
Yeah. Guys, it's kind of our downer introduction.
Yeah, you're not going to see the image I'm putting up right now. But, everybody, you can actually say this whole thing and you'll be able to wash your hands for a sufficient amount of time. I'm going to leave it up for a little bit. It's covering your glorious stalker picture.
Totally, guys. Definitely, wash your hands. That's really, and really do take the 20 seconds for it. And, from the medical side, I can tell you this. A lot of, the vast majority of soaps out there, do have moisturizers in them. And if you take your time washing your hands, you'll actually need to use less lotion, because you're going to give time for the moisturizers to work its way into your skin. But also, hey, moisturizers. It's okay, I was going to say that joke, and maybe I shouldn't.
Beep!
Yeah. Then again, I've spent like 6 episodes just swearing constantly, so, you know, what's a masturbation joke?
Yeah, at this point.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, do use lotion because, you know, moisturizers, you know, your skin produces oils. It's called sebum, and those oils pack in between the skin cells. And that prevents bacteria and viruses and just other things from working its way in between your skin cells. And so moisturizing is actually a very good preventative step to protecting your skin and, you know, those around you. So do take the time to wash your hands. If you wash your hands fully for 20 seconds, you're going to let those moisturizers and the soap work its way into your skin. And then on top of that, you know, if you're still dry, go ahead, use lotion because it's also going to be protective. And if you got surgical masks, if you got them from somewhere, a lot of those are washable. So you can't put them through a washer and dryer. We found that out because a lot of my veterinary colleagues have been doing that by mistake because they'll put in their pockets when they get home and then they'll run through the wash and they'll come out okay. I don't know how many uses you can get out of those. You know, obviously the elastic might wear out or the tie-ons, the ties are pretty thin. You know, they may give out. They're designed for one use, right? You just tear them off and you're done with them. Don't microwave them because a lot of those surgical masks will have a metal band on the nose, so they seal tightly over the bridge. So don't microwave them. Bad things will happen.
Terrible idea.
Yeah. 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 You know, it's one of those things like, you know, masks are so important now, and you know, I'm reusing what used to be disposable when, you know, from when I do surgeries, and it kind of does make me angry seeing, you know, photos of baby boomers on Facebook, you know, at drinking parties with their masks, you know, making fun of the whole thing, and it's like,
yeah, I could have used those. It's a little demoralizing. I actually have 2 N95 masks from when I worked in my basement because I didn't even think about buying masks until all the hysteria started. But I was glad I kept those.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of those things. The N95 masks will protect you. But most other masks, like the surgical masks that I use, it is to protect people around me, to protect the patients. And it, in theory, if I have it, I am protecting those around me from it.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of viruses, like almost all viruses, whether it's a common cold or whether it's influenza, but especially the coronavirus, there is that latent phase between when you are infected and when you are shedding viruses and when you start to show clinical signs. And I think that is the scariest part. And I think I read somewhere it averages, or the median, I should say, is maybe around 5 days, but it could be up to 2 weeks.
I think some people don't. Like some people actually don't show any signs. Or if anything, it's just like a regular flu, you know? I mean, it's not the flu, but you know what I mean. It shows like the same symptoms.
And, you know, for me, it's almost like, well, every interaction where I'm too close with someone, every time I go to the grocery store, you know, is that 5-day countdown start again. So, yeah, you know, we're, I don't think any of us are sleeping well. I don't think any of us are just letting it roll off our back.
At least any of us who can't, like, actually quarantine like us. It's really rough. Yeah. I feel bad for the doctors and nurses, man. Like I know you're a veterinarian, but I mean, imagine like if you were in the hospital right now, dude.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean it's definitely not the same.
Well, you don't have any hair, but
yeah, right.
No, I don't know.
It's one of those things, you know, a lot of us vets would give, you know, medical doctors shit behind their backs because, you know, we'd have people come in who are general practitioners into the clinic, and they'd come in and they don't know fucking square one about some of the most basic zoonotic or zoonotic diseases or just gastrointestinal parasites, you know, stuff that we just deal with all the time. And stuff that they would probably deal with if they lived in a third world instead of being in the U.S. where a lot of those things are pretty minimal. But it's just, we would give them crap like, oh man, these guys don't know a fucking thing. You know, it's like, well, no, you can't get your dog stitches out in 7 days. You have to wait 10. And no, you can't do it yourself. Oh man, some of the nurses, they just drive you up the wall. So we would give them a lot of grief, you know, because they would make, I mean, those guys can make good money. I mean, even a nurse can, depending on where they live, can make good money. Now, a lot of that may be balanced out or negated by cost of living expenses. But, you know, we would give them grief. But with this, they are someplace I don't think they, you know, they read about, they were trained on, they had to practice, they had to be aware of, they had to take all the epidemiological courses, they had to do all that stuff. But, you know, it was sort of like, you know, when the Iraq war hit, when people went to Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, it was sort of like, for 30 years, I mean, you join the military so you can get your college taken care of, you know. And yeah, they trained for war, but I don't think anyone was ready for, you know, a 20-year war. So that's kind of where it's at. Like, they knew about it, and they were trained for it, but I don't know if anyone was really ready for the toll of it.
Yeah, it's rough. Well, I guess if I could do a soap recommendation, I actually got this stuff that's made by WD-40 called Lava that actually works pretty good. Some of them actually like have moisturizers in them, but obviously you really don't need it. But it really works on, because, you know, I deal with a lot of grease. Some of the stuff like super old, so it's like it really sticks like under my fingernails or all over my hands or like up my arms.
The really dirty stuff that gets like right.
Yeah,
in
like the real annoying stuff. Like you just it could sit on you for like a day, no matter how good you scrub, you know. But yeah, it takes it right off. So if you guys are looking for it, like any bar of soap, I don't know what it was. That was the only one I could find. And I got it on a whim, and it worked really good.
Yeah, man. I like the Duke Cannon stuff. That's one I've been with for about 2 years. That's the brand I like because it's.
Oh yeah, that stuff's great.
Yeah, the bergamot and black pepper I think is just currently my favorite scent. It's really really nice. You don't need to worry about using it with like the soaps like with all the antibacterial stuff added. I think the FDA, you know, mandated a lot of that stuff to be taken out anyway because it didn't really make a difference. I mean, soap by itself, if used correctly, i.e. 20 seconds, and if you get it, you know, throughout all the nooks and crannies in your hand and you get your fingernails and all that stuff, I mean, soap on its own pretty much obliterates bacteria and viruses without a hitch. Like, mm-hmm. It just wrecks it, no problem. Just soap.
Yeah, we hope, in summary, we actually hope that everyone's doing okay out there. You know, I'm sorry it took this long, but, you know, obviously we couldn't necessarily podcast because we've just been so busy.
Right. And, you know, and the other thing to be aware of, too, is, hey, you know, this lockdown stuff, this social distancing, this can go a long time. This is not going to be done at the end of April. You know, we might see the curve flatten, but I think a lot of us are going to see school canceled until the fall. And even that's probably got an asterisk by it.
It was canceled.
It seems like the coronavirus actually does well in warm temperatures. I know people were talking about how a lot of coronaviruses, for example, the common cold, tends to abate in the summer. You know, influenza tends to abate in the summer. But this one, it seems pretty hardy. You know, it seems pretty hardy. And I think, you know, we're seeing that in India, we're seeing that in Africa, and we will see it in South America. We will see it in Brazil and other countries. So, yeah, we're going to see it. We're definitely seeing it in Florida. Florida and Louisiana are getting hit pretty hard. You know, they are behind the curve of Illinois, and they have surpassed us in numbers very fast. They didn't take it seriously, and they're going to feel it, unfortunately.
You know what else likes to stick around too long? The clans.
Yeah, they do. Oh, man. Yeah, there's too many clans. So, yeah, are we jumping into our part two of the clans?
I don't see why not. We can give it a go. I was thinking Zellbergen is bullshit.
It is bullshit. It's so bullshit. So this is something that Dan and I have been talking about for years now. I think there's other people that agree with us. They've talked about in the fiction the idea of Zellbrigen. But Zellbrigen right now is like the old-fashioned I just made. I'm out of ice.
That's what you got right now?
So I just diluted it with water, and it's just a hollow shell of what it should be. And that's Zellbrigen.
I already drank all of mine, so...
So, yeah, I mean, you know, the problem... Here's the thing is that, you know, when you read the Warrior of the Kerensky book, and they talk about honor, but they don't really lay out Zellbrigen. And they put in Zellbrigen with sort of the honor stuff. They mention it in the original TRO 3015, and it comes out in other sources. But you can kind of tell that, you know, for the clans, I get the impression that, like a lot of factions, whether, you know, we're talking about like real-world equivalents, you know, things that we actually see in the real world, or in the fiction, is that there is sort of the political presentation that people put out. They're their own narrative. You know, the clans are honorable, and they resolve things via combat, and they don't like politics, and so on and so forth. But it's very evident throughout the story is that the clans are very political. They just dress it up differently. They are imperfect, like everyone else is imperfect. You know, every faction in the Inner Sphere has its pros and cons. You know, the only faction that really seemed to have its shit together was actually the Taurian Concordat up until the Reunification War. Because up until then, Taurian Concordat had everything going for it. You know, had a great education, had a great military, had a great social safety net, had a great income equality. It did everything right. And then the Reunification War came along, everything went to shit, you know. So, but you know, there's always a narrative that people put out about themselves. And clans always put it out that they're very honorable and they're very fair, and they have this caste system, but it's actually a very fair caste system, and yada yada yada. And it's very evident, if not explicitly stated by the writers, but you look at their weapons of warfare, their battle mechs, their vehicles, their aerospace fighters, it is very clear that you have variants and configurations of these machines that are designed to operate outside the confines of one-on-one honor duels.
Oh, absolutely. Why would the Naga even exist?
Right, right. And these are things that predate the invasion. Now, I imagine in many respects, maybe when they came to the invasion, because they treated it more like sport, by treating it like sport, it becomes more of a challenge, you know, the one-on-one Zellbrigen stuff. But even that kind of, you know, probably went out the window very quickly. And, you know, 1v1 and the clans for a lot of different trials, probably for Trial of Grievance, I'm assuming yes, you know, but when you get to things like Trials of Possession, probably not.
Yeah, I would think you wouldn't use it for something like that. But I think it would also depend on what it's actually for, where they would actually use Zellbrigen. I mean, obviously for something like a bloodline, you know, like I could see them sticking to it.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely places where it belongs, but I think it's, in my mind, you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, a lot of things kind of go out the window when it comes to things like Zellbrigen. Because how do you use tactics with Zellbrigen?
Well, the offenders are really, if you look at the field manuals, which actually came out, I don't remember. When they did Invading Clans, did they have all of the formations that Clan Steel Viper had? You know, like the Maw and the Coil, when they outlined
Good question. I'd have to go back and look at
Let me dig it up quick, because it's like right next to me.
Yeah, and I believe it was mentioned there. But I think one of the big things that stick out to me is when they talk about all these different tactics, and you know, there's loads of examples. I mean, whether it's in the Warrior of the Kerensky trilogy or the Jade Phoenix trilogy, and you know, what is the point of doing a flanking maneuver? You know, if for whatever reason there is an unequal number of opponents, and you have, you know, 3-on-3 engage or something like that, And then, you know, another couple battle mechs decide to flank around. And so now you've enveloped your enemy. But everyone else is engaged. So what do you do? Yeah. Like, you've enveloped the enemy, you flank them, you come around to their side. You just stand there and just wait? Like, what's the fucking point?
I actually just looked it up. It's not in there. It's not an invading clans. It actually comes out in the field manual.
Okay, yeah, yeah, which field manuals were late 90s, early 2000s, I think.
Yeah, like, way beyond, well, not way beyond it, but, yeah, definitely after the fact. Probably when they found out how, you know, horribly imbalanced the clans are.
Yeah, because I think that Invading Clans is set post-Takayid, and field manuals are set post-Twilight of the Clans. Am I right on that one?
Yes, because you don't get a Smoke Jaguar entry in the field.
Right, right, right. So yeah, so it's just, it's one of those things. Like, what's the point of doing anything tactically if you can't take advantage of that? And so that's one of those things where Zelbriggan's fine in theory, but I imagine it's not used very much. And it's one of those things where this kind of gets back to how horribly unbalanced clan tech is in the game setting, because it is so grossly unfair that unless the clans are outnumbered, I mean, at least a company versus two stars, but maybe even, you know, more so than that, you know, maybe it's, you know, two lances versus a star, or maybe a whole company versus a star. Because the amount of firepower that the clans can put out is obscene compared to what even later Inner Sphere designs can do. I know some people talk about how the Inner Sphere has closed the gap, but man, I don't know. It's hard to ignore some of the crazy math. Yeah, I think for me, I think for me, the two biggest offenders are the Clan ER Medium Laser and the Clan LRMs.
Really? You don't, I think the pulse lasers in there, big time.
Yeah. You know, pulse lasers having that negative too. So like in the Inner Sphere version, I mean, the Inner Sphere pulse lasers are all shortened quite a bit in terms of range. And the Clans, what? I mean, they increased it by what?
Oh, God.
25%?
It's really, really high. I think the Inner Sphere one goes up to 10 hex. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. The large pulse for the Inner Sphere goes up to 10, and the actual clan large pulse laser goes out to 20. So it's like double.
Yeah. And if I'm close. Less than an Inner Sphere PPC, and it does the same amount of damage. You know, so you could take a clan large pulse laser and swap out any PPC on an Inner Sphere mech, and you've made them drastically better. You know? I mean, the clan ER PPC is pretty good. I mean, you've got a head capper, and it's energy efficient. You know, it does 15 points of damage.
Double heat sinks.
That's pretty awesome.
Double heat sinks. That's what makes it a deal breaker.
Yeah. But you know, any of the clan pulse lasers are pretty powerful. The ER medium laser. So one of the things that you see when you look at the stats for BattleTech weapons is that either the bigger the weapon is or the longer its range, the less tonnage efficient it is. But it does make a big difference. You know, if you are an experienced player and you know what you're doing, you can take on a Hunchback with an Enforcer, no problem, and win probably, you know, over 50% of the time if you can keep your mech at range.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get that Clan ER medium laser, you know, a large laser, an Inner Sphere standard large laser, 5 tons, 8 points of damage, 8 points of heat. It goes up to 15 hexes. Clan ER medium laser goes up to the same range, weighs 1 ton, puts out 5 points of heat, and puts out 7 points of damage. It's gross.
I do not see anything wrong with that. No way.
And the LRMs, man. Oh, man, LRM.
I am in the same boat as you. I really think the minimum range was a typo. I really think it was. And they were just too lazy to change it.
They just ran with it. It was published, and they just ran with it. Yeah. So, yeah, all clan standard missile weapons weigh half as much as their industry counterparts. And the LRMs in particular have no minimum range. So it's like, what's even the point of taking an SRM if you're a clan player? Just take a bunch of LRMs. Who cares, right?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, man.
One hex away. I got two LRM-20s in my Timberwolf. Fuck it. It's whatever.
It's like some of the variants that, like the Viper that has the SRM-6 with the Artemis. It's like, oh, that's cute.
Right.
You're trying. Right. Yeah, good job trying to balance the game there.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. Like, I the Kraken / Bane. I really like the primary version that has all the ultra autocannon 2s. I think it's really cool. The one with the 6 LRM-15s or something. There was even more than that.
Who was probably honestly fielded that?
The LRM-15s.
Yeah, have you actually used it before?
Well, no, yeah. I haven't. But we're not really heavy clan players. But man, it seems pretty brutal. I mean, I bet an Alpha Strike, it's a monster.
Oh, absolutely. See, I always liked clan versus clan battles. Those are my favorite. I never really liked fighting Innersphere technology because a lot of the people usually, at least I played with growing up, they had to do it the real cheap way.
Yeah. I think that's one of those things. When it comes to, because everything comes down to what's going on with the board game, right? Everything comes back to the board game. And I think it does really show itself how the rollout of the clans, I think, was very interesting in conception. We talked about that in a previous episode.
Yeah.
The slow grind and reveal of the clans and how they had planned it out. But when they actually landed, I think the clans, the way it was implemented, probably did more damage than good. Because it's so wildly unbalanced, everything, and a lot of things weren't very explicitly explained or hammered home in sort of the etiquette of the game. And I think I don't know how often you've seen it, Dan, or how often you've talked to people about it, but when Challenge Games was still open in Joliet and, on the boards, on the Battletech boards, it did seem like a lot of people. Well, the clans brought in people into the game. It did make a lot of people run away from the game.
Yeah, it was almost like a double-edged sword.
Yeah. Because you would get the worst people, the people you just would absolutely not want to play a game against. They were the ones picking up the clans because it was such a, they were power players.
So a lot of new players we get today don't understand that Zelbringen was not a thing. It was, like you said, it was only barely mentioned. Like, it was kind of, in the back somewhere. Like, when people played these games, they really did not use it.
Right,
it was
right.
Really annoying.
They would do things like, oh, we'll make a force with equal numbers or equal tonnage, and as a lot of you guys probably out there know, is that, a Mad Dog is not the same as a Rifleman.
It's not the same as a Quick Draw?
Yeah. It doesn't matter what version of the Rifleman you take. And I actually like the Rifleman. I will use it. I was on one time on one of the boards, some guy was like, I'll never use a Rifleman. And it's like, you're teaching your girlfriend how to play the fucking game. You should be jumping for joy that she wants to play the game with you. I wish I could do that. And you don't need to curb stomp your girlfriend the first time she plays. So take a Rifleman, whatever, man.
Tell me about it. Well, my wife Jess, she's desperate enough because of quarantine. She played Alpha Strike with me.
Yeah. Like this is a great opportunity, and you're squandering it because you can't even stomach the thought of taking a rifleman because it's not a quote unquote good mech.
Both the games we played, she totally beat me. You know, I'm experienced enough. I mean, the second one, that was the scenario I posted in the update I did. Like, we played that, and, you know, she won it. I gave her the lone mech versus my three.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things, like, yeah, I mean, winning is not everything. You know, just enjoy the game.
So when it comes to clan tech, what we're basically saying is we don't think clan, like, the technology itself... probably the weapons most of all. I don't think I really have a problem with, like, the whole Omnimet concept or, like, the double heat sinks or anything like that. But the weapons themselves don't really fit the aesthetic of what the clans should be.
Right, right. And I think one of the other frustrating things is the writers... I mean, this goes back and back and back. And if you guys ever get a chance to open up the open up a copy of Maximum Tech, there is sort of the opening... you know, story. And it's a scientist. I think it's at the New Avalon Institute of Science. And he says that, you know, the clan manufacturing techniques are so amazingly advanced and so awesome. And they use these really rare materials that, and, you know, sure, we can make these, but they have to be made by hand, which makes them very expensive and impossible to mass produce. And it's very frustrating because that's sort of not what's been described elsewhere in the fiction. You know, we're told constantly that the clan settled, you know, resource poor worlds and the Pentagon and home worlds, and they don't have access to nearly the amount of resources of the industrial base the Inner Sphere does. And then, you know, we read about how during the reunification wars, as you get this gradual and suddenly very fast progression from primitive tech base to standard tech base, so the more advanced stuff, and it seems like the Inner Sphere and the periphery realms had no problem suddenly popping out Gauss rifles and XL engines, which they then later lost during the Succession Wars. And the loss of those technologies is actually more believable than the lack of the ability for the Inner Sphere to catch up to clan tech. And, you know, fair enough, right? I mean, the clans were written to be outnumbered. It was written to be a completely different playstyle and completely different planning. But, you know, the issue is you still can't get around how imbalanced the game can be sometimes.
Yeah, it could be pretty brutal. You know, another thing that was kind of lost, this kind of gets into the art too. If we go back to look at how the clans were on worlds that weren't particularly, I can barely talk right now. Because of the whiskey, but, well, they're struggling on their worlds with resources, obviously. So something like an Omnimech would make sense. And the new art doesn't really fit that, because the parts don't look interchangeable anymore like the old ones do.
Yeah.
It makes more sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Dan and I have talked about this many times amongst ourselves, and we're not the only ones who have mentioned it independently, but, it is a bit of a bummer, and, you know, and I get it, the updating of the aesthetic. And, you know, a lot of the clan stuff, a lot of the updates have been they've been pretty minimal, which is sort of like, well, did you guys just want these things in plastic? Or did you just want, you know, new designs? It is a bit of a shame. And I think the Omnimac technology is very interesting. And I think in the right hands with the right player group, it is a very neat idea that, you know, you can be, you know, role-playing a character and you can be swapping out things. And I think it has a really, really good, really good opportunity.
It has a feeling like how fighter jets can switch out their weapons loads so quick.
You know, like different bombs.
Different bombs, extra fuel tank, you know, that kind of thing. It creates that image.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very neat. It's just the problem is that the crazy performance of the clan weapons. I mean, and even if, you know, the damage output was toned down a bit, it, you know, wouldn't be so bad, or the ranges weren't so obscene, you know, it wouldn't be so bad.
Well, I think the other offender too is that how they have the stock pilot as automatically better than an Inner Sphere regular, like their stock pilot. That does not help at all either.
No, not, correct.
Not only, you know, do your weapon, and the thing is, like, it's one thing to have a weapon that outranges your opponent, but the other thing is Battletech is unique than, I would say, most other games, because they have certain brackets that are for each individual weapon, opposed to, like, how it's handled now in Alpha Strike, where it's a static range band. So a skill 3 pilot in something that has a short range of, like, what, 10 hexes is a big deal. A really big deal compared to, like, let's say the weapon in the same class, if an Inner Sphere pilot had it, that's probably long range for him. There's no way a skill 4 pilot is going to target a clan mech that is, like, is in his short range bracket. And on top of that, he's moving faster, even at walking speed, and he has a better pilot.
Yeah. And it's the XL engine, the clan XL engine, I think is really critical to this. So not only do you have lighter weapons, but with that XL engine and those lighter weapons, you can really afford to bump up those mechs in speed and still have a damage output that the Inner Sphere still can't compete against. And so, yeah, you combine that with better pilots. And yes, I mean, I know they hand wave that with the fiction, with the SIPCOs and everything. But, I mean, you know, in many respects, I mean, the SIPCOs don't really seem that different to me than, you know, if the Inner Sphere had moved, is supposed to have moved towards a more feudal system, then you have all these noble families that have kids, and then those noble families are built on the idea of having a battle mech, and so they're training these kids to pilot these battle mechs from a young age.
You have mercenary brats. You know, like kids that are growing up with
the Greatest Legion.
Yeah, like, how can they not be... anyone in that kind of scenario end up as good as a clan pilot right out of the gate?
Right. No, I think the one thing that the clans have that they can cite is their washout rate. And this is something that is a kind of sticking point for me, being a veterinarian and having a biology background. You can only make your reactions so fast. You are limited by how fast your nerves can actually conduct electrical signals and impulses. Now, your reaction speed to auditory signals is slightly faster than your visual input. And one of the reasons why for that is just the pathway is simply longer for eyes versus ears through the brain. But you can only really react so fast. So, when they talk about things like reaction speeds in Battletech, the clans cannot physically make them faster. Mammalian nerves are about as fast as they're going to go.
Yeah.
What probably you could use is, training can minimize the delay, so your brain is not thinking about reacting. So, okay. Here we go. Adam's talking about fighting games again.
If you're using an example, I got another one that'll tie into that too. But you go first.
Yeah. But like, when someone jumps in at you in a fighting game, and you anti-air them, the first time you're trying to do that, you're probably getting stuffed every time. That guy is heavy kicking you in your face every time. So you go and you practice it. And suddenly, what you're having to think about, you're having to see, think, recognize, and do becomes you see it and you do it. And so you're suddenly, uppercutting them every time they do it. And you're knocking them out of the air 90% of the time. Whereas before, 90% of the time, you were being stuffed. And so what you can say is that maybe the clans are better because they've been, it's a really high washout rate. So only the best of the best of the best made it. And then as a result, they have been trained in many ways so they can do things without having to think about it so much. And that was what gives them a better skill. Or they've trained so much that they're better at reading their opponents and predicting what their opponent can do in ways that maybe an Inner Sphere your average inner spirit warrior can't do because of the washout rate. And so if you're wealthy and you come from a wealthy noble family and you still suck at being a mech warrior, but you're wealthy, you can still pilot your mech and you can still get placed in a military because of wealth and resources.
Yeah. You know, and what all this kind of sounds like, Adam? Do you remember this thing in the 90s that we used to watch that was related to Battletech? That actually was Battletech. It was the cartoon. How in the hell did they not use enhanced imaging to figure this out? Okay? You're talking about making their reaction time better. Okay? You're talking about people being trained from birth, right?
Right.
Why couldn't they have, like, forget how we know enhanced imaging is, like, people going crazy, all of that. What if they just did that from the start? This is what would create your difference between a trueborn and a freeborn. The trueborn has enhanced imaging and he's been trained from birth, right? Yeah. So, in the Inner Sphere scenario, your clan pilots are coming out, you know, gunnery 4, piloting 5, like a standard Inner Sphere pilot. When you want to get that 3-4, you have to have enhanced imaging on because you are merging with your battle mech instead of using a narrow helmet, and you are getting a better reaction time than that Inner Sphere opponent is getting. Now, let's say you start losing armor. You know, what is the big drawback with enhanced imaging? If you get rid of the craziness, what's it going to be? You start taking those internal structure hits, you're going to start turning into mush. So you can give the clans their extra 3-4, you know, you can give them their 3-4 skills as long as they have enhanced imaging on. But you create a scenario for the clan player. Well, crap, what do I do now? You know, I'm starting to get low on armor. Do I switch it off and go back to being a normal pilot? Or do I keep it on and ride the wash and see how lucky I can get? And then, you know, you might end up with a knocked out or dead pilot really quick.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got more of it kind of helps make the clans more of a glass cannon.
And that would do it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, for those of you out there in podcasting land, I mean, you know, the enhanced imaging, I think that was a bit of a retcon after the animated series, right? That wasn't mentioned anywhere else.
No, I believe it came up in, obviously, it was the first Somerset Strikers book. And then it came up in, I believe, Maximum Tech. I want to say, and I am not 100% sure about this, it could have been mentioned in one of the Master Rules books. Like, not Master Rules, but in one of the compendiums. Because I remember they even had some of the cartoon animations in there, too.
Yeah. I wonder if it was the Clan Wolf source book.
It might have been. I don't remember, but I always thought that, you know, everybody gives the cartoon a lot of flack, you know, but I always thought enhanced imaging was a really cool clan thing before I actually, like, you know, you started with the cartoon. You know, I started with MechWarrior 2 with enhanced imaging. You know, why, the reason it was dropped, I don't know. But I think that would have created more of a dynamic for the clans than just giving them advanced tech and Zellbrigen, you know? And even then, they could have had Zellbrigen in there, but it could have been by, like, a formation basis. Because it would make more sense why, you know, we're getting back into Zellbrigen with all of this, why Clan Steel Viper would have used the special formations that they had. Because they're not fighting per warrior, they're fighting per formation. Or, you know, maybe like per star. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Your star is challenging another star, so you're going to use your formation to combat that star. So you can have different clans with their, you know, like Snow Raven uses a different style, and they're clashing with the Steel Viper style, you know. You get more interesting battles out of that. And then throw enhanced imaging in the mix.
Yeah, I think enhanced imaging, you know, in many ways, it also speaks to the nature of the clans. I think in a way that it sort of encapsulates it in a way that not many other things tend to, outside of the fluff like the Hunchback 2C, right? You know, I mean, this is, you know, death or glory, or death and glory.
Oh yeah, but you can even have, like, I was thinking enhanced imaging. I don't even know if I said it. But it should just be a trueborn Omnimech thing. And then, you know, as the Trueborn, you know, he starts phasing out, you know, then throw him in the, you know, the Hunchback. And he'll be your 4 or 5 pilot or, you know, whatever it is adjusted from his experience.
Yeah. Yeah, they, I think they missed some things. And of course, and this doesn't have to do with the current writers. I mean, this goes back. I mean, this you know, goes back 20 years now. Well, shit, more than that.
Oh, God.
Goes back 30 years. Oh, my God. You know, this goes back a long ways. You know, opportunities that were missed. And I think, I guess I don't want to say the mistakes that were made, because you can't necessarily make something and then totally predict what the players are going to do with it. But, I mean, it is a problem that the introduction of the clans brought in that I think hurt the game in a way that they didn't expect. And they kind of had to backtrack and redo things because they were probably hearing from fans about the problems that they brought on with these, you know, crazy powerful designs. I mean, you just look at, you know, a Timberwolf or a Summoner. I mean, it's hard for me in many ways to look at a Summoner and think that, yeah, that can't beat an Atlas, you know? Like, I'm pretty sure the Summoner can beat an Atlas. I'm pretty sure a Timberwolf definitely has no problem beating an Atlas. And I think that's the kind of thing that kind of makes you go, huh? You know, and especially if people were doing, like I said, was saying, oh, yeah, we're going to play, you know, to equal tonnage or equal numbers. You know, to beat a clan mech, you kind of have to go, at least a weight class above it to have a chance. You know, the Fire Moth in particular, yes, its armor is very, very thin, but it can probably, if it loses initiative, it can probably get far enough away that it isn't an issue. And if it wins initiative, it can probably circle around behind you with no problem.
Yeah, I have experience doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
the Fire Moth D is a beast. An absolute beast. It's the one with the 5 medium lasers and the targeting computer.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, really crazy. Oh, it has a flamer too.
Just for good measure.
Yeah. When the pilot rage quits and he lands on the ground, you burn him.
Yeah. 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 I think one of the things that concerned me about the clans was, and again, like, what can you do, right? I mean, how many words on a page can you dedicate to the clans? And so, again, this isn't so much of a swipe at the writers, because, you know, it's a, how many words can you put on a page to describe something? But, you know, you look at, you know, the Inner Sphere factions, and you get the impression that any type of culture can kind of exist anywhere in the Inner Sphere without too much grief. But there's probably going to be an overlying culture, right? And so you could have, you know, Great Britain in the Draconis Combine if you really wanted to. But everyone's probably going to speak Japanese, and then maybe there's a, you know, an overabundance of rice in the diets. You know, not a big deal. It's just sort of the way it is. But you can imagine that, you know, if you want to play the Draconis Combine, you can guess what music people are going to be playing, right? What kind of instruments are going to be available? You go to the clans, and it's like, there's an artisan cast, but do they play music? And the reason why I bring that up, if that sounds kind of weird, is that outside of, like, electronic music with maybe a keyboard, what do you do? What do you play? Because if you want to play a wind instrument, this all involves some pretty specific hardware to make these things. I mean, you've got mandrels and you've got forms and molds. You've got very specific jigs to make key work on. Even if you want to make a trumpet, you know, I mean, anything, I mean, even a bugle is going to involve some pretty specific things.
You think they spend a lot of time, banging on an empty autocannon shell?
Right. It probably, yeah, it probably all sounds like Metallica's Saint Anger. Just bang on a freaking metal stool for a drum because it's the only thing they've got. But yeah, I mean, you think about it, like what exists for them to do in terms of the artisan cast, in terms of even music? It's that kind of thing of, you know, the clans are so extreme. They're so different. You know, what does any of that look like? And even then, if you want to go back
further.
It's
a lot of insult comedy.
Right. Like, even if you're the SLDF and you're on the Exodus, what do you even bring with you? You know, you can't just take anything with you. You know, there's
it takes a long time to make a character in a time of war. They could have brought that.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, what does it look like? How do you make guitars? Are they acoustic? What are you making out of? You don't have wood because the planets are so resource poor. So what, you're playing on like
Meyer
polycarbonate
bundles and old Mackie parts.
Right. So yeah, it's just one of those things, you know, things were so extreme for the clans that, you know, what do those things look like? But, you know, what do you do? BattleTech's a game about battle mechs and stompy robots. But it's also not, right? I mean, it's also the Mad Max setting and the feudal setting and the tech degradation. And I think when you lose that, you lose something else. And I think if you focus on the big stompy robots, you lose something.
Unless you're Clan Hell's horses.
Yeah, sure. Sure, the Hell's horses, whatever.
Clan Snow Raven.
The Blood Spirits and the Protomex.
Yeah. I actually like Protomex. Don't get me started. Until you have to actually track all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was, I mean, I think, well, Dan and I are kind of, we've been drinking whiskey, so what are you going to do, right? And we spent about 15 minutes rambling on about the coronavirus, but I think that kind of gets into sort of our second part about the clans and sort of, that's part of the problem with them, and it, you know, just kind of summarize it, just sort of their introduction to the board game kind of complicated a lot of things in a way that I think weren't intended in the political veneer that, whether or not was intentional, the sort of in-character viewpoint gave itself in terms of honor, and how that kind of limited the clans and both hurt them and hurt the game in a way. And I think, for example, it would have been interesting if the ERPPC was instead the enhanced ERPPC that was given to us as sort of a clan Wolverine technological improvement. You know, you've got an ERPPC that does 12 points of damage instead of 15 points of damage. Versus the 10 that the RPPC did for the Inner Spirit during the Star League era. Like, well, that's actually probably more acceptable than doing 15 points of damage, you know. And if the Inner Spirit wants to match that, they can either a heavy PPC, which weighs a whole bunch, or you have to take an ERPPC with a capacitor. So it is even more heat. And it might explode.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
We know so much. There's so much technology in the game now at this point that you can actually see different ways you can balance it all out.
Yeah. And I feel two ways with all the different technology they've included in the game. It definitely gives you a lot of variety to play with. It also kind of makes you think, wow, is that kind of a lot to track, you know?
It's too much.
Instead of the more of the rock, paper, scissors approach, it I don't like the Big Bang Theory, but you know, the rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock approach. Oh man, I hate Big Bang Theory. It's not even funny. It's not even a funny show. I hope you guys aren't going to roast me for this one. It's not even funny.
I won't.
I kind of wonder with the clans, you know. I think I see what they were doing. You know, if the game has an ongoing meta plot, how do you advance the meta? And how do you not just retread your succession wars? Well, you introduce the clans. You know, you lay the groundwork for it, you bring them in. How do you make them different? Well, you make them very militaristic. You make them, you know, very cult-like. You give them really great technology. You make it a numbers game. You know, it's less battle max for the clans or less units for the clans versus the Inner Sphere. But you ended up not getting that. And I think Battle Value and now Battle Value 2 have mitigated that, have addressed that. And I think, I don't know, Dan, am I wrong with this, that they are thinking about doing a Battle Value 3?
I don't think you're wrong. I think I remember somebody mentioning
it. Am I just
it
drunk? Ended. And I just can't think straight?
No, I'm drunk too, but... I vaguely remember that being mentioned. Who knows, man? It probably got scrapped. I mean, what? They split IllClan into two books.
Right. And that's another
we're
thing.
We're probably going to get 3.0, like, what, 5 years from now?
yeah. You know, and it's I don't want to shit on the writers because I know it's not easy, and I know a lot of them are doing this freelance. And, like, the three full-time employees that Catalyst has are doing, what, three or four different IPs? You know, because Catalyst Game Labs is not just Battletech. You know, it's Shadowrun. It's the Duke. It's a number of different casual games. Because the dudes still have to make money. They have to make money. They need to put food on the table. The company needs to survive. So they can't just do Battletech 24/7. We can't just take, you know, Ray and Randall and Lauren and Blaine, and you shove them in a fucking room and say, you have to write Battletech or you don't get to eat, you know? I mean, we could do that, but it's illegal.
Yeah, pretty illegal.
But
I don't know. I mean, it depends on what you're feeding them. Maybe they will do it.
It's true. I mean, there is an argument to be made that, you know, would like much like dogs, we would all be doing better if we were on a nutritionally balanced kibble. I mean, it'd be boring, but we'd get everything we need. But yeah, you know, it's been so long since the plot line has been closed. It is a bit of a letdown, and you know, I think Brent Evans was probably, in retrospect, once IllClan comes out, we'll probably realize he was right to split up IllClan into Shattered Fortress and IllClan. But the cliffhanger from Shattered Fortress was a real letdown. And I hope in retrospect he will be right. I don't doubt it. It really sucks to be waiting. I don't know if you probably feel the same way, right, Dan?
Yeah, it'll get there. I mean, we've waited this long. I mean, just to see a Kickstarter go up. I mean, yeah, I remember complaining about that, like, who knows, man, probably like 10 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, the Kickstarter is probably taking up a lot of time and resources. I mean, we're probably getting things that are more important to the health of the IP than the next book. I mean, getting new maps to play on is huge. Getting new resources is huge. Getting new novels, getting new scenarios to play, those are huge. Resources to play the game are big. The next plot book, probably not that big of a deal. We just want it because we've been following the game for so long.
Yeah, not a big deal like Zelbergen.
Right. Or Honor.
Yeah, or Honor.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, we'll circle back. I mean, if Battle Value 3.0 comes out, I mean, that'll probably help balance things even further. I think for a while there was force multiplier resources or some sort of like a force multiplier value because, you know, in many respects.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. If you outnumber your opponent, you have to add like a certain percentage to it.
Yeah, then there is a big benefit to having more battle mechs, more units in general. But I think that went away because I think they didn't, for whatever reason, like those numbers just didn't end up really working out to balance the game as the way they thought.
I mean, there's Battletech has so many weapons and factors in it that putting a solid percentage on top of something that's already there isn't really going to help much.
Yeah, I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, or if you disagree, I do think BattleTech is at its strongest when it is helmed by a game master who is setting forth the story, and the battles are maybe asymmetrical. The goal is not the last mech standing. There's more of a role play element, because it means you could play more interesting fights. You could do more interesting things because you're not worried about who's going to win what.
The only thing I disagree with on that is the game master. You're basically just describing a scenario.
Yeah, but I guess I would say it's more of there's more of an ongoing plot being played out. And so the stakes are not so much, said last mech standing, who wins this fight, but what happens down the line? What happens to get you through the next fight? And how do you approach things? Do you have the resources to repair your battle in the mech? And I think a good game master will know how to balance a scenario. And granted, yes, really, really bad dice rolls means an entire lance of battle mechs can lose to a lance of vedettes.
Yeah, but that's battle tech.
And that's Alpha Strike.
That's just battle tech. That still translates into Alpha Strike, man. It's the beauty of the bell curve.
Yeah. Stuff like that can happen. But, in general, what are balanced scenarios and what challenges the player group without necessarily wiping them out? And I think that's where BattleTech really, really strives. Whereas, like Warhammer, it's a miniatures game. You just throw, 100 miniatures on the field and they can be all poorly painted. It doesn't really matter, but they're all painted and you wipe out, 20 units with, one round and you just quickly blast through everything. Mm-hmm. BattleTech's not like that.
I mean, that's why Zellbergen's bullshit. No one necessarily has to follow that.
Right, well, and even a few years later, they ended up providing rules for exemptions to Zellbergen and clans that are more likely to ignore it.
Oh, because the Inner Sphere players had an advantage suddenly. Because you could have your spider challenge the direwolf and jump at the edge of the map while its other lancemates run up behind it. Nope, can't shoot me. Zellbergen.
Yeah.
Poor direwolf, Adam. That poor clan player. Man. Get good.
It's funny because in places I've seen get good used. Well, and
it was definitely a troll thing for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely get good. It can be definitely a troll thing, but I think there's definitely a point. And if you guys aren't fans of Sibby 11 on YouTube, I definitely recommend.
Oh, I know where you're going with it.
Yeah, and it took me 4 years to finally get around to doing it, but I finally played Doom 2016, and I've been a Doom fan for 20 years now.
It's safe to say that almost everyone in our generation is more than likely a fan of Doom.
Yeah, and actually, my first interaction with Doom was on the 32X, the Sega 32X. I kid you not. My dad got it for my Sega Genesis from Best Buy really cheaply, and I actually still have the box. I took photos of it. And that was my first experience with Doom, was on the 32X. And then, of course, I got on the PC and then play all the different things, the different source ports. So I finally got on to playing Doom 2016, and for the first two or three levels, I was like, man, this game is really fucking hard. I'm only playing on Hurt Me Plenty. But then it clicks, right? You start getting the all the your abilities
the
and you get all
the
flow. And from what I understand is Doom Eternal, which just came out, is even crazier. Mm-hmm. And Civ 11, posted in his video, he's like, oh my god, the first three or four levels were just pain. I thought, this sucks. This is terrible. I'm not having fun. And then you get the boat. Then you get your buffs, and you get your weapon mods, and you learn the flow of the game, and then it's amazing.
See, part of the reason why it's so engaging too, I know you mentioned rock, paper, scissors. See, the thing is, like, Doom encourages you. It's not that it's rock, paper, scissors. It actually encourages you to try new things and use different weapons and use the different upgrades. That was the whole goal they had with it. But I mean, if you want to fight with one weapon and you're good enough, you can. You know, it's just you're going to have to use at least the chainsaw so you can refill its ammo, you know, or at least be really, you know, efficient at killing your enemies.
Yeah, yeah. And with Doom 2016, when I did my ultra violence playthrough, after I had learned enough, the funny thing is one of the last things I upgraded with the Praetor suit was the ammo capacity, because I was relying on the chainsaw to refill my ammunition in a way that I didn't do it on my first playthrough. Mm-hmm. And that idea of get good, I think, is also really potent. And I think once you're an experienced player and you've learned how the game works, you understand the mentality behind the idea of get good. I mean, if it's a bad game, it's a bad game, you know?
Yeah.
If it's a badly designed game, what can you do? I mean, we've all seen, you know, the angry video game nerd.
Yeah.
And you know, if the game has bad hit detection, it's got bad hit boxes, and it's got just bad platforming and bad controls.
I.e. clan technology. What do you do?
Yeah, clan technology. You know, like when you play, we've all probably played an old school racing game, right? And the AI just zips around at full speed and takes perfect turns around corners.
There's no margin of error for them, opposed to a human player.
You know, and again, like it comes back to, you know, the idea of, like, fighting games. You know, and people will complain, like, "Oh my god, you know, this character keeps jump attacking me, and I can't get around it. You know, it keeps doing the same thing over and over again. I keep falling for it." And so, like, well, yeah, if you keep falling for it, what reason should your opponent not keep doing it? If it works, keep doing it.
See, and
you have to learn to anti-air. You have to learn to do it. You have to practice. You have to get good.
Yeah, and getting back to the comparison with Doom, you know, 2016 and Eternal, it kind of goes back to Zellbrigen. Like, that's the main problem with it, is it's a meta thing. It's not in the gameplay. It does nothing to the gameplay. It does nothing to the technology that the clans have unless you use it. If you were to throw something in there, like the enhanced imaging example I have, and it's actual part of the gameplay, you're forcing them to act like a clan player then. Because they have something to balance that relates to the gameplay. It's not just a meta thing. It's there. Like, it's in the, like, you have an Omnimech, this is what it needs. A clan Omnimech, this is what it has, this is what you have to follow. You know what I'm saying? You can't necessarily do that with Zellbrigen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely follow.
You're forcing them to do something through the actual, like, weapons and technology itself, kind of like using stealth armor. You have to balance, you know, you have to have all the heat and suffer the ECM effects. You know, they need to start treating it that way instead of, like, throwing all these story elements that don't make sense over it.
Yeah, yeah, the balance affects the Inner Sphere tech more than it does the clans. I know the clans at the
Zellbrigen right now is basically the monitor at the beginning of Doom 2016 trying to tell you how to do Zellbrigen. You just take it and throw it against the wall because you're like, screw that.
Right. I don't care about this.
I don't care. Get out of here with this stuff. Crap. I'm going to go kill shit now.
Because, yeah, I mean, you look at, like, even take for example, the XL engine, right? Like any engine, it takes three hits, you're done. But, you know, the Inner Sphere can't survive a side torso hit. You know, the clans can.
Well, enhanced imaging would balance that out. It doesn't matter if you have a better engine. You're still taking the internal structure hits.
Right. But, you know, with the old rules, and with the XL engine, I mean, it by the time you've lost both side torsos, you're pretty much done anyway as a battle map.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is, you know, the whole idea about physical combat is a bit silly, and that the clans do. And it, clearly, like, the Steel Vipers don't care. You know, because they developed a mech specifically for, you know, physical combat, the Matador, with its, like, shock-absorbing fists or whatever. So,
I vaguely remember. I don't think they're the only ones that did that. I don't think they're the only ones that incorporated that into their designs. I think, didn't the Blood... No. Who am I thinking of? Not the Blood Spirits. I don't know. One of the Snake Clans. I think when they made the tribute mech for the Buroks, it has, like, that claw arm. I think that was used for physicals.
Yeah.
I mean, the Kodiak, too. Look at that thing.
With the claws built into it. I mean, like, that's probably not just decorative, right?
I mean, you would think. It probably isn't.
So, I mean, that's sort of our piece on it. Not to ramble on for too much longer.
Yeah.
I have no idea what we're going to talk about next. This was a long road in between talks. I mean, there are a couple of things that I want to talk about. I mean, I think one of the things that caught my eye was sort of the in-universe characterization of, say, like the Capellans and the House Liao. I thought, like, I was looking back at stuff recently. I was like, oh, that's really interesting. It's kind of like entirely negative. Like, the whole family is described as being worthless and awful human beings, which does not necessarily bear out outside the source book. So I thought that was interesting. That'd be worth talking about.
Yeah, I'll have to read up on that.
There was a thread on lambs at the forum, and I thought lambs would be an interesting topic to kind of discuss as well.
I don't like the new rules at all.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the new rules, but I think...
And that's not even like a, oh my god, I need lambs, I need them to be overpowered, like, kind of standpoint. It's just, it's like I really think they made them so confusing to drive people away from using them.
I think so too. I think they ended up hurting them, and especially compared to how lambs were perceived previously, you know, before the lawsuit with Harmony Gold.
they just get rid of lambs. And then Clan Tech comes in. They're like, hold my beer. We can make this worse.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think talking about lambs would be cool. And sort of their history in game and the changes to it and how they were actually viewed. I think that'd be good. I don't know. I don't know. What else? What do you think? What do you think you're up for talking about, Dan?
I mean, with everything that's going on right now, I drew a blank. I mean, honestly, I thought we would just try and talk about Zellbring, because that was the first thing that came to my head. Plus, I was actually thinking about that enhanced imaging stuff not too long ago. I don't know where that came up. It might have been something in the Facebook group. I think Bishop Steiner posted something about Protomax, and it had me think about it. But I don't know. I was kind of dancing with the idea, like, if we don't have to social distance anymore, all this stuff blows over, it'd be cool to start actually recording some games. Might be something fun to do, because there's a lot of interesting bat reps on YouTube.
Yeah, man. Only problem is I think social distancing is not going to end anytime soon, unfortunately. When was the last time we played a game? Was that February we played?
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah, we played that cool... So for those of you who don't know, I think it was in the model kits that FASA had put out, and this is when they had licensed stuff from 20th Century Imports, and it was a model kit with a Shadowhawk and Scorpion in it, the quad mech and obviously the iconic Shadowhawk, which was the Doug Ram and the Crab Gunner or Tequila Gunner?
I believe it was Crab Gunner.
Crab Gunner. And that was really cool because it provided this history to explain kind of what became the tactical doctrine for the Scorpion during the Succession Wars. And it was really to be a scout hunter. Because the Scorpion is lightly armored, but really fast for its size, and does carry a PPC and an SRM-6. And with the quad mech's ability to do lateral shifts, it is a pretty slippery little dude. And so the idea that would be its function would be to hunt down scout mechs. So your Stingers, mm-hmm. your Wasps, your Commandos, your Locusts, etc. That's pretty cool. And so the scenario was a lightly damaged Scorpion paired with a Hunter tank. So a Hunter tank is a light tank, fusion powered, has a forward mounted LRM-20 and a rear mounted flamer. And the fiction that it's their technical doctrine is to hunt down light mechs, and they come across a Shadowhawk, and it ended up being, so it was a Scorpion and a Hunter tank versus a Shadowhawk, and it ended up being a really cool scenario, and it was actually really fun to play even with our enhanced autocannon rules.
And then we did the punch close location too. at the last minute because it would be fun.
It ended up being a very, very, very fun scenario to play. It ended up being very, very close. And actually what clinched it was a really, really lucky back-to-back boxcars with an LRM-20. The clusters, two clusters ended up hitting the head, a previously damaged head, Shadowhawk, that took it out. And again, that kind of comes back down to the fun power of the cluster table that people tend to knock because it says they think it takes too long. But man, you know, back to back boxcars don't really happen all that frequently.
The funny thing about it was that that Hunter was just terrible. It missed the majority of its shots.
The Hunter did not. I think connected once with the LRM-20 before that, and after that, there was nothing for like five turns. And then when it hit, it counted.
We had it where when I said punch location, we decided to dig out TAC ops and use the, like, if you were like above your target,
shots from above, shots from below. Yeah.
That was pretty neat to use too. We didn't have to, but it was a pretty good situation for it to use it, and that didn't even head cap the Shadowhawk.
So I think the Shadowhawk took like one or two SRM hits, previously from the Scorpion, and then it was the back to back LRM-20 clusters, and that was crazy.
Yeah, you were just like, wait, what? Oh, wait, I already hit the head.
good times.
Speaking of scenarios, I know we were thinking of maybe making a scenario, not like per episode, but maybe throwing some out there once in a while too.
Yeah, I think it's something worth doing. I mean, this is going to be a platform for us, you know, putting out various scenario ideas we had. I mean, we did one that was, an elite Jaeger mech pilot with the enhanced autocannon rules versus, I want to say it was like three light mechs. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like a King of the Hill scenario. And, you know, granted, the Jaeger mech has paper-thin armor, but when you've got those buffed autocannons, it really makes it a viable machine. It makes the autocannons much more viable. So scenarios like that, we were thinking about publishing. And you know, I had an idea for urban mechs and the Vindicator and like the coolant tanks and pirates and stuff like that. You know, kind of trying to suck up water. It's like a water raid. So we have ideas. So,
well, you can use the. Like the Flufford of Vindicator, how, you know, it could put its arm in water to vent less heat for the PPC. Right.
Which I think is a super cool idea. You know, it's just one of those side things that, you know, fits in the universe that doesn't really get discussed, but I think it'd be really worth it to bring up. So if you guys don't know about that with the Vindicator Fluff, you guys should totally look that up in your... Did it make it in the 3039, or was it just in 3025?
They probably ripped it out.
Yeah.
They, if I recall, I think they took a lot of the quirks like that out of at least like some of the weird wonky ones like that, they took them out in the update.
That's a shame.
Well, I mean, they're doing it now with the Omnimax, getting rid of, you know, the putting torso twisting on like the Nova and the Dragonfly.
Yeah.
Or Viper, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can keep going on about that.
We shouldn't. We've been talking for, well, I don't know, because we were doing some test calls and stuff like that beforehand, but now we made it to an hour 30, so I think we're pretty good. That being said, guys, hey, stay safe, wash your hands, do take social distancing seriously, even if the coronavirus is not as lethal as it seems to be. You know, even there's a lot of people who have been infected that are not showing severe clinical signs, you may pass it on to someone dear to you. I think it's important to keep that in mind. One of my neighbors has had two cancers and a heart attack, and she's like in her 70s, and so she is just like, needs to be put in a complete bubble because
shoot,
Rita can't die because Rita Rita makes me bake goods, so Rita does not die.
Oh yeah.
So it's do take it seriously. It's a long haul. I think we're all pretty, like I said before, you know, that rain cloud of grief and anger is with us all. You guys aren't alone. If you're out there and you're feeling that, I'm definitely feeling it. I know Dan's feeling it.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. So just, you can't get lazy. You know, you can't just say, oh, I was fine. You know, you should, you know, still, you know, you get home, you guys should wash your hands, you know, wipe your smartphone down with alcohol, stuff like that.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. I mean, don't use, I don't know, I guess if you want to pour vodka on it, you could.
It depends on what kind of vodka, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, we're going to end it on that note. Yeah, Dan giving really good advice.
So, yeah, well, hey, take care, guys.
Yep.
And, yeah, back at you, Dan.
Stay safe.